You are listening to LP Uncovered, a music podcast hosted by myself, Lauren Plant. On this episode, I'm joined by the wonderful Norwegian singer-songwriter, Sier Bruvik, aka Mettison. Born and raised in Moss, a small coastal town 30 miles south of Oslo, Mettison studied acting at Oslo National Academy of the Arts before realising his true gift for songwriting. Known for his electrifying live shows, a blend of pop star dynamism and theatrical grandeur, he's already sold out multiple venues around the world, touring alongside many wonderful artists, including Aurora and Sigrid. In February this year, Mettison released his highly anticipated debut album, Look to a Star, a beautifully expressive and dynamic 13-track record. Together, we discuss each song of the album, having such an open, honest, and inspiring chat along the way. So let's uncover Mettison's debut album, Look to a Star. Mettison, hello, how's it going?
Good morning, good day. Spring has finally sprung, and I'm happy about that, yeah.
Marvellous, because you're in Oslo.
Yeah, I'm in Oslo, that's right. Yeah.
Wonderful. And you've just got back from, well, not long been to New York.
Yeah, I just went to New York City, saw myself on a billboard. That was really fun. And just casually putting it out there.
In Times Square.
In Times Square, right. Mm-hmm. I was the, I got the opportunity to be the face of this global playlist called Glow. And it was, it's targeted at a queer audience, I guess, and a queer pop musician, that was really, really cool. And they put me on a billboard in Times Square, and it was a really surreal experience, but
amazing
fun. Yeah, really cool.
Were you able to like enjoy New York? Were you there for a bit, or how was that?
Yeah, the billboard was up for a day.
Wow.
So every 20 minutes or 5 minutes, like intervals, so I kept running back and forth the first day just to sort of get the, content, and to just feel the experience, see it in the morning light, in the night light, or lack of light in night. it was a really surreal experience. But yeah, I also got to stay behind with my boyfriend for 4 more days and just get to know New York City, Brooklyn. It was really cool. Yeah.
Beautiful. Well, I'm so delighted to have you on the podcast to talk about your debut album, Look to a Star. 13 songs. It's jam-packed. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to talk about it. But you wrote and co-produced the whole album. How was that? For your debut album as well.
Oh, yeah. I've sort of always found that music and songs come quite easily to me. Before this album, it wasn't like a walk in the park, but the music thing came easy and everything around was like a lot of work. But this time, putting together this album, it really put me to the test. I went through so many rounds, like what this was going to be, many different directions. And I thought everything happened really fast, but I realized that it ended up being like a 2-year
was it?
Thing. Yeah, it was a really, and many of these songs that I'm sure we're going to talk about, they're 5 years old, like the ideas. Wow. So it's been like this really sort of rounding up this whole journey of going into music, but I'm so glad it's finally out and I'm really, really proud of it. Yeah,
it is amazing and I'm so excited to talk about it. And you produce it or co-produce it with
Vetle Junker.
Yeah,
we're not a duo but he's my sort of my rock. And we've been working together for, I guess, almost 5 years. So he's sort of been guiding me into music in a way. And he's the most generous and patient producer. And I really found a home in his studio and with him. So, he's a big part of the record.
Studio, which studio? Was that in Norway or America?
Yeah, it's in Bergen. I moved to Oslo 2 years ago, so I've been going a lot back and forth making this album. He's been here a bit as well. Mm-hmm. And I've also been to Denmark and worked with Bastian Langebeck on some some of the records. So I've sort of dipped into not really like session writing because I'm not that comfortable in those spaces. But yeah, there's been some other hands and magicians on this as well. But Vetle is definitely my main collaborator.
And obviously the album artwork is a striking image and I love it. So is it from, it's a picture from a test shoot with your boyfriend on your bed?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. love it.
I really like to put a lot of effort into the visuals of medicine because for me, it's a whole package, the music. So I put a lot of pride in it and I've taken some photos that I thought I'd used for the album, but then one of my singers in the band, Amalia Holt Kleiver, amazing artist by the way, told me, but you have to have the starfish hat on the cover. But I thought, no, it's a debut album, I want to do something more, because I have this, for those who are listening, I have this gigantic frilly starfish hat, and it's become sort of a symbol, at least in my live concerts. And she said, you have to have it. It sort of rounds up the whole thing. And yeah. And I was very in doubt. But then I thought I'd do some test shoots. And my boyfriend is a good photographer. So we played around. Yeah, so I'm basically naked in our bed with that hat on. So it's white sheets, classic sort of... I didn't want it to be like too much. But then again, I didn't know that that was going to be the cover. Yeah, we got the film. We saw the pictures and I saw that picture and I was like, man, that's the cover. So yeah, really happy with that as well.
Yeah, and it really does encapsulate the like vulnerability of the whole album as well. And it's like iconic. And that hat might end up in a museum. It is iconic.
yeah. It's quite stunning. It's really, really cool. Made by Friedrich Fluen, for those who are curious, really cool theater and opera costume maker and also a textile artist. I think also the, as you say, it's sort of this mix of being very theatrical but quite vulnerable. And I also like that it sort of came about by chance, because a lot of these songs also did, of course. And I think it's this whole mix of things that are very curated and very weird and things that are very classical, and it's sort of a good thing to represent medicine, I guess.
For sure. And I'm really excited to talk about the visual, other projects you put alongside, like some of the videos and things like that later on as we're going through track by track. And you start the album with the amazing Only the Wind, and this kind of like choir-like angelic vocals, harmonies is like the first sound of the record that we hear. When did you realize you wanted that to be the like first sound of the record?
It was quite obvious once we had, once I'd made the sort of choir bits in the beginning. It's, I'm not the best with instruments. I make a lot of sketches for my music and I can play around on a piano, but I mainly make music with vocals and harmonies. And that's sort of where I got my start. And so I thought it would be a cool thing to sort of start with what I usually start with when I make a song, so not like an instrumental intro or something like that. So that was sort of a personal strong choice, actually. And also the song, I think it's the first sort of sketch I ever showed to a producer or a musician back like perhaps 6 years ago.
Wow.
Is this what old feels like? That text and that melody has been with me for so long. So it was sort of a feat finally creating like the whole piece. And it starts off very minimal with this choir and it sort of builds up and becomes a very big theatrical song. So I thought it was a good thing to have it in the beginning to sort of show the whole breadth of the album.
Yeah.
And then being able to sort of like essential medicine, I guess.
Yeah. So did you do all the harmonies, that introduction? Was that your voice like layered? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I love playing around in different octaves and really using my sort of castrato voice. I think that's sort of not underappreciated, I guess. It's something that I guess surprises some people sometimes when you go up in falsetto, and it's just a fun thing to have there. To have and to use the range, because it just opens up a the possibilities making melodies and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's you've got amazing vocal range and like you really showcase it across the whole album. When did you first realize that you could sing? Like, at what, do you remember what age you were when you suddenly were like, oh my God, I'm actually quite a good singer?
Oh, I've always been, it's like this boring answer that I've always been singing my guts out, really. But I had an amazing voice before my voice changed. And that was like such a big worry for me. So I sang through my puberty, like trying to keep like the range in my voice and everything. So it was like sort of quite hard work. I was actually playing, because I have a theater background, and I was playing Friedrich, was it, in Sound of Music. So, you know, Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Ti. I had like Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La. So I was singing like La. In a theater in Oslo, quite a big thing. I moved out from the suburbs into the city. I got this really big part in a musical, and my voice changed like the second week of production. So I worked my way through my voice change, and I think that's sort of what's kept that sort of range in my voice.
Yeah.
So no, I've been fixed or obsessed with my voice and its problems and capabilities yeah. for ages.
The second song, Delight, the lyrics really stood out for me on this one. I love the fact you managed to get the word ephemeral into the lyrics. Now that my worldview's expanded, like Tara herself took a breath, I'm leaning on records, ephemeral, fleeting, promise I'll lead this till death. Can you expand on the Tara reference? Because I know that's like Mother Earth and mythology. I'd love to know a bit more about like your influence behind the lyrics of this song.
Well, I sort of had this more conceptual idea of the album in the beginning with the song Naturally and Delight and stuff like that. The synth sort of chirping as birds.
Yeah, that's the introduction sound.
Yeah, that's right. And so I sort of left that idea somewhere along the line, but I guess it's still a sort of red thread or a nerve through the album. And I think Delight was the first song where me and Vetle sort of thought, oh, here is like a new sound from Ettison. And it sort of was the, I don't know, for me, it's sort of the weirdest song on the album. It's the one that was in a way on the chopping board for the longest.
Yeah.
Because it was the first song that we sort of found that sort of was the sound of the album. So it was sort of a template for many of the other songs. And then in the end, when the album sort of was almost finished, that song had been there for such a long time. So it was, the magic in it had sort of been lost in a way. But then we started doing some concerts before Christmas, just before we sort of locked the album, and we did that song live. And I thought it really sort of blossomed and found sort of the force in that song again. But the textual, talking about the text, I guess I really wanted to try to make a song that was about happiness and love without the bitterness factor in it, which I think is really difficult, because as Child of Robin and, I don't know, Christine and the Queens and stuff like that, there's always this latent bitterness or this possibility of things not working out or something like that. But I'd experienced sort of love for myself for the first time with my boyfriend. I was sort of in that experience of, my breath expanding, my vocabulary of love and emotion sort of expanded. So I wanted to sort of try to put word to that and be on the edge of camp and be on the edge of being awkward in a way, but try to keep in line. So it's sort of I think I managed it. Mm-hmm. I think just about. It's difficult writing happy songs without them being like, yeah, I guess like Pharrell happy. Like it's just it becomes really like childish or just sort of naive very yeah. quickly. So to try to find that depth and happiness and the experience of feeling loved or like, yeah, it's a challenge.
Yeah, that's, and I've spoken to so many artists that have said that for them it's probably easier to write like a sad song than it is like a happy song. And obviously in those lyrics that I quoted about the world views expanded, how much do you relish like pushing those boundaries or some boundaries, as you've kind of previously spoken about your music finding a place in families and communities that are maybe far less progressive than yours? How much do you like relish that as a musician?
Oh, I really at least relish playing with words. I think like having English as my second language.
Yeah.
I feel slightly detached to some of the meaning in a way. I could never have done the same thing in Norwegian because I would sort of be too embarrassed to sing about love in a way. Mm-hmm. So this sort of detachment gives me lots of room to play with, I feel. Also to connect with it in a very sincere way, because I can use my very personal emotions and turn them into, I guess, my art. But that's in English, and that's something else. So I sort of translate my own emotions away from my personal life, and then I can meet it anew in a way. So yeah, I guess that gives me a lot of space. But when it connects to people, that's a great feeling, of course. But I try not to think too much about the receiver while I make music, because I'm sort of scared of, I don't want to start performing their image of what I'm going to do in a way. Yeah.
And it's obviously really connected with a lot of people, as has the title track, the third song, Look to a Star. I love that you start off with the line, and we try to lend a hand to help you. It's almost kind of like mid-sentence kind of to start off a song, which I find really, really fascinating. You've kind of spoken about the song being about the hurt of seeing lost potential in people. Do you remember at what point you wrote this song, or like how long the song process, writing process was for this one?
Yeah, I remember coming up with the theme, look to a star, that sort of choir part very early, just experimenting with Vetle in the studio. But this whole song, I guess both Delight, Look to a Star, and Put It to Sleep, are tracks on the album where I really wanted to challenge myself to sing about something else than like the one-to-one love triangle or love yeah. to go, I don't know, and try to sort of look outside of myself and my own experiences, especially after sort of not solving the riddle of love only because I just had my or met my first boyfriend, but really trying to delve into what else I could create other than really catchy pop love songs. I had this riff of Look to a Star, and I sort of felt like I wanted to create a song where looking to a star, sort of in search of hope, but not sort of coming from a positive standpoint. Like it's not trying to make a sort of motivational song without making it motivational, more like I see your pain, I've feel / have felt that pain, and it's okay to stay in that space in a way. So it's more like recognizing some feelings and situations rather than trying to fix it or trying to Yeah, I just loved having Look to Star as a title track because it seems like a very, I don't know, flashy, sort of proud, like, I'm going to be a star thing. Yeah. Like the new album, Look to Me. But then the song is about something completely different. And I sort of love those layers, both in the song and in the meaning of having that track with the starfish hat and everything.
Okay.
Yeah. It was just my boyfriend came home.
Oh, sorry. Nice.
Yeah. And you said me using that and we try to.
Yeah.
All song is sort of whirlwind or whirlpool or whatever. It's a rotunda, like coming with the synth is this wave coming back and forth, circling around. And I wanted to sort of convey this feeling of not being able to take action. Always staying in this very, almost like sinking in cement sort of feeling. So I really wanted to start mid-sentence.
Right.
And in the song, I have sort of two camera angles, both looking at that person who's stuck in their ways and going into that person, looking at the people who are trying, not necessarily trying to help you, but sort of observing you. And that person trying to tell the group of friends or family or loved ones, whatever, like, hey, no worries, I'm good when you're not. And the people around saying, like, looking at that person seeing, oh, they're not good. But it's sort of, yeah. So I sort of wanted to stay in that awkward and very hurtful sort of position, I guess.
Mm. Yeah. Fascinating. And as is the video, I mean, such a wonderful creative expression, movement to encapsulate the song. Might be a stupid question, but how important are the music videos for your like artistic growth and exploration?
Oh, sadly, because they're so expensive, they're extremely important to me. I've always had a very clear vision with Medicine visually. And right before this album came out in February, like in December, I was very unsure what this Europe/Norwegian album tour was going to look like. I found myself in a sort of strange limbo where I didn't know where to go visually. And that's very difficult for me because I always had this very clear sense of that. So I thought that I had to make this music video to try to create that Look to a Star visual space and to push myself and see where can this, how will this album look like live on stage, because that's really important to me. And the music video is such a great platform to explore choreography, styling, and just to work with fantastic people and be creative and be inspired. So I had the best time with my two fabulous dancers. One of them, yes, if you the video with the beard, is my cover photographer and boyfriend.
Oh, that's so cute. That's so cute. Will he be featuring any more videos?
Well, hopefully. I need to create some more singles or albums. Yeah. and money in a way. It's sort of my biggest expense, these music videos. Since it's so important to me, and I feel like it's a good investment and I get to use it in promoting the music. And I feel like once I've sort of struggled, because Medicine is very, very much about the live music, the live part of it. I was an actor for 5 years, and bringing the music to the stage is really what I love to do and what is my sort of main thing. So I feel like if you listen to the album, hopefully you get a taste of what Medicine is. But I really do believe that the live thing is the thing. And that's sort of weird in a streaming culture. So I feel like creating a music video is the closest thing I can get to doing sort of live music for a broader audience. So yeah.
And we try to lend a hand to help you, guide our tears away so you can have the space. And we smile and tell ourselves you're good now, hoping that our smiles will take your fake one's place. And we look to a star that never ignited, wondering what could be.
Totally. You watch the video and then you're like, I need to see this see you live. Like, it's great. Very clear that you're going to put on quite a show. And I'll talk a bit more about your live performances. But another wonderful video is Put It to Sleep. It's another iconic video. I love the use of the sand throughout the video and the like sand crying eyes. What was the importance or like idea behind that?
I think initially I was sort of inspired by Madonna and her Frozen video and that song in general. It sort of had this, a revival also with a remix, I think, some like a year ago or something like that. This was before that. And there's this sort of desert-y feeling to it. But I also wanted to create this very, because we had this big studio space, but I wanted to make something quite site-specific or something I could also, again, use on stage, make some tableaus. And I ended up becoming this, or being in the world of this sort of Sandman, talking about Put It to Sleep, and this idea of beautiful, nightmarish, sexy dreams. I guess it's starting to become a long time ago, but my boyfriend is actually in that music video as well. I had this sort of Gaga moment where he's sort of choking on a microphone and I'm singing in his face. Have a look. It sounds kinky.
It's great, and there's a lot of pillows used in the video as well.
Yeah, I just wanted to take these symbols or metaphors of dreams and sleeping and death and everything and try to create something quite timeless and stylish. And I think we really managed that on a very low budget. I'm very proud of both those videos. They sort of go hand in hand, I think.
And any music videos that have kind of really stood out for you, maybe when you're younger, or anything that's been like iconic music video that has been something for you as a musician that's really stood out?
Yeah, I think absolutely Frozen by Madonna.
Yeah.
I remember seeing her cloak turning into this panther turning into a crow. I think that's a legendary music video. It's so beautiful and poetic. So yeah, I think that's my one.
Fifth song, Waves, it feels very anthemic. Just the sequence when you kick off the whole album, Waves is so great. And you said it's like a song in three stages and each stage is like a chorus, which I find really fascinating. How did it come about? So I'm right in thinking you're visiting your boyfriend in Copenhagen and that's kind of where it started.
Yeah, he was dancing at the... he was dancing in a company in Copenhagen and I was visiting him and sort of trying to branch out, meeting other producers. And I met Bastian Langebeck.
Yeah.
Great producer, really chill, talented guy. So I found a little home there as well in Copenhagen and worked a bit with him. And one day walking to his studio, which is sort of out on this pier, I was walking along the coastline with these big giant waves and that sort of text to melody came to me sort of straight away. You seem to ride the waves that pull me under, whatever brings me down lifts, whatever brings me down lifts you higher. And I sort of ran to his studio with this image in my head of pulling someone else down. And that sort of image of... I don't know, jealousy perhaps. But I imagined it as this Lana Del Rey-ish, very chill, which you sort of get a taste of in the intro or the verse. But Bastian sort of pushed it to this more disco dancey thing, or we pushed it together towards that. And it's such a fun song to play live. And it's, to me, it's like outrageous. In how it's so campy and fun and like unapologetically pop in a way. But I also, you mentioned the structures, and I'm glad you did. It's, I guess it's sort of what keeps it from being, I don't know, a stereotypical pop song in a way, mm-hmm. at least in my head, because if you wanted it to be like a radio hit, you wouldn't go like sort of back down again once you really put in the bass and the rhythms and everything. But I sort of like to do the unexpected sometimes. And I again envisioned it on stage and trying to sort of create that dramaturgy that's perhaps not that popular with, what should I say? Like, I'm my managers and my record company, they were like, oh, I know you can't go back down there. And I was like, yeah, I'm gonna. and just, I guess, trust my gut. But yeah, it's there's sort of three stages that sort of keeps looping, sort of like a wave or a tide.
There's no way of going back to the open arms of summer. Salty pearls, we let them dry. Slowly poisoned by the handshakes as they firm as time goes by. You seem to ride the waves that pull me under. Whatever brings me down lifts you high.
The sixth song, Naturally, you've spoken about the whole album really being this exploration of like our darkest and brightest moments and how to like kind of bridge that in between with forgiveness and hope, and that's a wonderful like context behind an album. Where does this song fit into that like exploration, I guess, darkness and brightness?
Well, I try to sort of paint nature and this love potential in as like the most beautiful light and in the most beautiful textures and colors in music, but then having this contra thing of all of this is so beautiful and yet I can't feel anything or I can't see the beauty in it because it's not for me, and I or this love is not for me, or I can't see the sort of beauty in the sunset because I'm somewhere else, or I this song Naturally is, I guess, the best portrayal of my sort of pain in my 20s when I couldn't seem to find love. And I met so many beautiful people and dated like these fantastic people. And I just hated myself for not being able to love them or reciprocate that sort of joy, or it was I really felt like things didn't come naturally to me, and I could see that in other couples or in other people. So yeah, it's a very painful song about beauty that you can't grasp for yourself in a way. And yeah, so it's quite beautiful and quite light, but yeah, with a very sort of dark undertone.
Yeah. And it hits really powerfully after Waves as well. I think it's a little bit more stripped back, and sequencing wise, what made you put this song kind of, well, it's very much in the middle of the record, after Waves in particular?
I talked about Waves, I really like to try to create a good dramaturgy, but that was difficult with this album because I had a lot of ballads that I wanted to put in. So I ended up structuring the whole album sort of like I would a live concert, sort of build it quite slowly but really come to like a cliff's edge and then really pull it back with some ballads, and naturally is, since it's still quite synth heavy in a way, the landscape of it is quite, I don't know, colorful, and there's a lot of things happening still, even though it's a sort of quite a stripped down.
Yeah.
So I thought the change from the sort of 80s synthy waves with sort of the same, you have the natural elements in the symbol, that worked out quite well.
So the sun will rise over the mountain and paint you in a warmer light. All bodies scan to see if I feel anything, and my eyes will say that they might. All the red leaves heavy with morning dew will sing of your happiness.
And it also works really nicely with the seventh song, Wallace Road, which again is kind of like these very like fragile, vulnerable vocals to start off the song, which are really powerful. In this song, was it lyrics or melody first?
It was very much, usually when I have a good song in a way, which I feel like Wallace Road is, comes very much at the same time.
Oh, right.
I went to London to write with Vetle actually, and I just met Ole, my boyfriend, and I was really happy, in love. And I had this thought that, will I be able to write sad songs anymore? And then he was going home a bit earlier than me because I was staying behind to write some music. And we were standing at this this crossroads, and he said goodbye. We kissed goodbye and he went off to the airport. And I looked up and I saw this sign that said Wallace Road. And I sort of imagined, oh, what if he was actually leaving now in the middle of this revelation for me of love and companionship? What if he suddenly actually left and didn't just leave for the airport, but left me? So that's sort of the where you left the street on us midway loving. And then I saw the sign Wallace Road, and I said to myself, I still have Wallace Road whispering to me with the melody in my head. So it really just came in straight away. And I made that song in, I guess, 15 minutes walking to the studio.
Wow. In London?
In London. So I guess it's the only song written. I wrote some songs in Copenhagen. This is my London song.
Hey, well, I'm glad us Brits get a mention.
Yeah.
I also really love the strings on that one. Who was behind that, and what made you kind of want like the strings in that one?
I just think that, I guess, the cello is like it's a heart jerker. It marries so well with the human voice, and also to have this depth swooping in, because I use my like head voice in that song. Yeah, I just think it was really, really good pairing, I guess, and also sort of daring to go all that way to really do the cello thing was something we had to try. And luckily we have this great cellist, Matthias Monsen, and he also did Put It to Sleep, put some things in there. He's got this great ear. Yeah, you can just sing a melody and it appears even better than you'd expected. So he was great to have in the studio. And also, Vetle is great at programming string instruments. And in the past, we've done some tricks and stuff, but I really wanted this album to be, when it's supposed to be live instruments on this record, I really wanted it to be pure and have that natural depth and feeling. So I guess that was especially important in that song, which is so bare in a way.
It will show when I'm older, but I've had the sun inside, and where I'm going it's colder. I still have Wallace Road whispering to me, play back to scared and cold down by Wallace Road, where
8th song, Further Away, you, to take your lyrics quite literally, you start off talking about you felt the love of the radio. And I was just going to ask, like, how much are you kind of like into your radio, your podcast, when you're not doing like writing your own songs and things like that? Like, what do you tend to do in your spare time, really?
I have a very sort of romantic relationship to listening to music. Playing my vinyls is sort of a morning ritual to me.
Oh.
So I have a, yeah, it's starting to become quite a big collection. I'm a person who, I'm extremely focused and interested in text. So I find it quite difficult to listen to music while I do other things, in a way, other than eating breakfast or making food. So I find it hard to have music in the background, in a way. So I sort of listen to music when I listen to music, and I do that in the mornings, and I do that with a glass of wine in the evening.
Beautiful.
And I'm not really, and of course when I go out dancing and whatever, that's the whole other thing, and exploring music at festivals, stuff like that live. I love seeing things live, but I'm not really one of those walking around with headphones or earbuds all the time listening to music, or delving into every new artist or stuff like that. I, especially writing this album, I really isolated my ears in a way, trying to not find other references. A big mistake I did was sort of diving into Troye Sivan.
Okay.
I think I had 1 week left of making this album, and I heard his, I guess it was Rush or something like that. And I was like, oh, what the fuck am I doing? This guy putting out this fantastic dance anthem-y song really made me question every choice I'd make. So I really try to sort of protect myself in creative. I'm more inspired by, I don't know, like textile art and photography and movies and mm-hmm. books, rather than actual music, because I get it. It sort of winds me up too much. The references start bubbling, and I sort of can't figure out what's my music and what's other people's music. So I don't like being too influenced by other musicians.
Right.
Yeah.
What was? Have you listened to a vinyl this morning yet? Or
No, not yet.
Oh.
Okay. I was watching the Swedish Bake Off.
Okay.
with my dog. She just got I don't know if you say that about dogs in English, but she got her first period.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, bless her.
We have like a, because we call it löpetid in like running time, almost like directly.
Yes.
I don't know if you have an own word for it.
No, what do you call it?
Löpetid. Like directly translated, it's running time. I don't know.
No, we've never referenced it as running time, but it could catch on.
She's very clingy and a bit anxious, so we had a walk in the park, just listening to the birds chirping, and then we've been chilling in the sofa with a cup of coffee watching Bake Off.
That's what you need when you're on your period, feeling anxious and needy. You need some Bake Off.
Yeah, that's right. So I think I gave that to her today.
Right.
But she actually listens to like dog therapy music, which I think is a bullshit. But but she was so anxious about being home alone when she was younger. And so we sort of tried this music thing just to sort of distract her from other sounds. And I don't think it has any effect, but I don't want to chance it. We sort of do anything for her to become comfortable. So she's got these songs called like Chill Walk in the Park or like Puppy Party, and they're all like blum, bling, blum. It's so weird.
Oh, it's hilarious. I'm really getting to know Vera. I feel like I'm witnessing her first period, all the music she listens to. This is amazing. I didn't think I'd get to know your dog so well, but
the listeners should learn, don't get a dog. It's really,
that's funny.
All the time.
I felt the love of the radio, wanted to split the screen, to go out on a limb to show we were an in-between. Took a picture every night, I stacked up towers, bed of roses tucked.
the ninth song, Close to Your Beating Heart. Another great song. What was the inspiration behind this one, if you don't mind talking about it?
Yeah, it's the seed is sort of family, I guess. Leaving the nest, being in that, I don't know, this image of the duality of leaving something safe, looking back at your childhood and who you were and your ambitions and your ambitions and seeing where you are right now, and not being sort of, I don't know, proud or pleased with that. And I guess everyone can sort of, or I don't know if everyone can, but many people can relate to that. Your family's expectations of what you're going to do. And yeah, so that was sort of the seed of it. I think it turned out to be something more, I guess, universal. You can put it into many other contexts or relationships. But again, it's me trying to create something. Okay, it's about love, but maybe it's another loving relationship than with a partner. So yeah, it's sort of this this duality and this weird and difficult love that is family, I guess, in a way, and seeking comfort in them, but also seeking distance.
Are your family musical?
They absolutely like music. I'm very much influenced, especially by my mother's musical taste, like ABBA, Joni Mitchell, and many of these like iconic women songwriters. Yeah, Whitney Houston, the big voices. So they have a love for music, but we don't have any musicians in our family. They're just really supporting and open for us to do what we want to do, and have always been sort of not being like stage mommy at all.
No.
My dad is a career advisor, so he's been constantly advising me to not do what I'm doing for now 30, 31 years. but I see some old videos, recordings of me being like 2 years old, and he's filming me and he's saying, sing, Sveta, sing, sing, sing. So it's sort of his fault.
Yeah.
No, I have a really close relationship to my family, and they're extremely accepting and loving, and they're very proud of me. But that also sort of creates this. Yeah, that can also be, I don't necessarily feel that way, at least all the time, but this feeling of wanting to make them proud, but also seeing your own limits, seeing their limits, seeing, I guess, this endless love you receive from, for example, a parent or someone else in the family can also sort of create some sort of, I don't know if shame is the right word, but if you don't feel like you live up to that expectation or that love even, I think that's sort of an interesting subject. It's nothing that I go on about, but it's this idea that I tried to sort of churn, and it sort of ended up being this song.
Tenth song, Blue Eyes Open, this beautiful piano ballad, really. I describe it as that. Did you write it on the piano?
No, I didn't really. I think I'd sort of made it in the shower. And then I told Vetle, like, this is a piano ballad. And we started working it out. So, yeah, I guess we made it on the piano, but I didn't sort of search for it in the chords or something like that. It was very much what am I talking about? I made it with Bastian, of course, in Copenhagen, and it was very much made on the piano.
Okay.
I'm a little ahead of myself. I think actually you're completely right. He was playing, he had this really like old piano, it was resounding in the studio, and he was playing some chords, and I said, don't come too close, like the intro. And he was like in this very producer way, like looking behind his shoulder, being like, ooh, yeah. and then it came about. Yeah, absolutely. I was thinking about a completely different song that very much happened on piano. It's sort of my Elton Johnny palette. It's one of those songs. I think Second Heart is another one of them. Like it's bridging on musical, but it's sort of, it's like many of, not to compare myself with Adele, but I am gonna. she's like right on the edge, or actually beyond it, but stays within this sort of pop spectrum. And I, yeah, both Blue Eyes Open and Second Heart, which is another ballad not on this album, a previous single, they're sort of torch songs for me, like showing off some range, really digging into the difficult emotions. And I still have this sort of, because I don't think I'm too precious with my music. So those are two songs that I would really, really, really like some like big, great vocalists sort of redo. Oh. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'd love that. I'd love that. And I don't do it all the time, but I think like those are two sort of really classic songs. I'm sort of surprised that I sort of wrote them, because I feel like my lyrics are a bit more messy, a bit more Delight-ish, like weird, but I think they're really like classical, nice ballads.
Yeah.
And I love that. Yeah.
Well, Adele is a regular listener to this podcast, so you can expect a cover anytime soon.
Are you kidding?
No, oh my God, I'm kidding. Oh my God. I'm so sorry. I obviously can't mess about.
No, but you never know. I got this DM, this great guy on Instagram, a writer called, his name is Joshua, isn't he? He lives in LA, and he was like, Adele is my best friend. He liked my music. And I was like, oh, cool. And I was like, no way. And then, then I see this image, and I don't know if it was Vogue.
Oh my gosh.
But then he was like standing next to Adele, and I was like, what the f-?
Yeah.
I'm like, in a way, I'm this close to Adele.
There's a mutual friend that you have with Adele.
There is a mutual friend guy who knows Adele. So if I talk about it often enough, maybe
yes.
Maybe she'll.
Sadly, I'm not another mutual friend, but I'm very happy to think that you think Adele might listen to podcasts. This makes me very happy.
You never know. I think she
might too.
She likes a glass of wine, and she likes to listen to people talk. I bet.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yet, but nothing to see here, nothing but me here. Please stay.
The 11th song, Last Resort. You said this is one of your like live favorites. And I watched,
can't come over the fact that I actually thought.
Oh my God, I know. I know. I mean, imagine.
I'm really sorry. I'm sorry.
No, it's great.
I feel so stupid. I never know.
You never know. I'm just presuming she doesn't, but that might be a bad assumption.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. Oh my God, please listen. Okay. Last Resort, you said, is like a live favorite. And I've watched a video of you performing in Brixton, actually, in the UK. Yeah. And it looks amazing. Why is this one such a favorite for you to do live?
We made this goofy line dance to it.
I saw that.
Yeah, which is now country is really hip. It's suddenly on everybody's lips. I guess it's always been in a way.
Yeah.
But I sort of thought, oh, this sort of groove fits really nicely with some line dancing. And I really wanted this was before I had dancers on stage. I wanted to have my musicians and chorus do some movement with me. So I made this stupid little dance. And I don't know, it's something about the... it's very theatrical. It's sort of we call it sort of poodle rock in Norway. I don't know,
poodle rock.
It's sort of glammy. It's
we say glam rock over here.
Yeah, exactly. It's sort of, I sort of have those images. It's very cinematic and I don't know. I think it's always like bordered on tacky, but that also makes a great dance song live or like in a concert setting. It really works. I struggled a lot with making the song into something that could be on the album and not just be like a live party fun thing. For me, it was like it sort of dipped into some interesting themes and ideas, but the text together with the music was for a long time in Brixton, for example, for me it was just too much of a parody of a cinematic pop song in a way.
Right.
This was the last song that was sort of completed and put on the album, because a week before we had to close down shop, I sent the song to Bendik Håko, an amazing drummer and producer, and also in my desperation to sort of fix the song, I said, please, could you just see if you can sort this out or just make it fresh for me? Because we'd been playing it for two years almost, like 1.5 years on the road, and I was sort of not pleased with it. And he made this drum, this sexy, sultry groove, which sort of flipped the whole thing around for me. And I suddenly thought it was really, a lot more fun. And it's still such a live favorite thing. And I really get to jump around on stage in nylon and sort
love
of
it.
And play that sort of sexy character in that sort of villainous lover and the sort of fake savior.
So cool.
I have a lot of fun with that song, but it was a struggle. It was a struggle. But
have you ever seen Rina Sawayama?
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh my gosh, did you see her Glastonbury set?
I've seen some clips. I actually, when I wrote Wallace Road, I went to her album release party.
Oh my gosh.
Because Jason Kwan, I think is his name. Jason Kwan. Really cool queer pop musician, up and coming in London. He supported me on a concert at Lexington in London, and so he invited me to Rina's party, where he was doing this drag cabaret thing called Bitten Peach, which was a lot of fun. So it was like really fun gay draggy album night where she performed, which was fun. Yeah, she's got that sort of bordering on tacky in a good way, like glammy pop. I love sort of the riff thing in Hold the Girl. I haven't listened like a lot to Rina, but she's got that edge that I guess this song is sort of tapping into. I think she does it better. I'm not going to go down that road or that route, but I tapped into it. Yeah.
No, I was just thinking like her live set and like the way she performs and things like that. And I watched her Glastonbury set, and like you could see just the energy that she got from the crowd as well. And from the clips I've seen, sadly, I've never seen you live, but it just kind of gave me that kind of vibe as well. So, really cool that you can make.
That's a huge compliment. She looks great live. Can you trust with your soul, bone marrow? Baby, let the rain fall. Meet me at the nightly.
The 12th song, Heavier Than a Heart, your intros stand out throughout the whole record, and this is probably like the longest intro on the record. How did this song come about production wise?
Let me think. Sorry, where are you going? Yeah, Utnen. Yeah, okay.
Your boyfriend, like, this is a long interview.
Yeah. He's made an omelette for me, but he's going...
Oh, my God. Okay. It won't be much longer.
No. I'm not going out to meet his friends. That's
okay.
Fine.
Okay.
He can have those for himself. They're lovely people.
Aw.
We don't have to join. We don't have to be together all the time. Do you want to say hi?
Hey, how's it going? I loved you in the video, by the way. I found out that was you.
Thanks so much.
Heavier Than a Heart was, yeah, it was your favorite, wasn't it? My favorite. Oh, his favorite. Heavier Than a Heart is my boyfriend's favorite. I think it's my mother's favorite, actually, as well, on the album. The idea of the verse, if there's pain in your chest, give your heart a rest and hand it over. This mantra of handing over your pain or handing over your love or try to connect with someone else. That's an idea that's been swirling in my head for, I think it's like 3-4 years old, actually. Also trying to find its place, trying to find a chorus or some road for it. I wrote it at the same time as I wrote Naturally. So those were two ideas that came out really simultaneously.
Simultaneously, no, yeah.
Simultaneously, yeah. Thank you. Yes, I really tried to find where will this verse go. And then I had this other idea of, if empty, can you tell me what is heavier than a heart? This empty shell of an heart, the empty shell of a heart is something really difficult to carry around, which also sort of echoes Naturally and the thought of your heart not being capable of doing anything other than being there. So yeah, they're sort of married in a way, those two songs. The production came about really quickly. This was also like 3 weeks before we had to send off the album to the vinyl to be printed. So it was sort of gut instinct first try, really. I think we didn't have the time to stop to see should it be something else. So it became this sort of big theatrical pop ballad with the strings and yeah, a really like heavy chorus in it. I think I missed, because we have a lot of up-tempo songs, we have a lot of big songs with a lot of showcasing a lot of voice and range and stuff like that, and we have some really good mellow ballads, but I sort of wanted this one ballady pop song where you could really imagine a fan and like the drama of, like, not like a drizzle of rain, but really like rain pouring. So we really went hard with this song because I didn't want another slow burner or another mellow ballad. So I think it sort of ended up becoming what it ended up being because it was the thing that we didn't have on the album yet, in a way, subconsciously, to make sure that we could put it in the album, because it's also, at least lyrically, I think it's perhaps my favorite.
The last song on the album, the 13th song, Ever Working Tide. Why this one last? I also really love, again, like this choir sound. Is that an actual choir or?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Those are my friends.
Oh, wow.
From the theatre. I worked at a theatre in Bergen for 4 years, approximately. The National Theatre in Bergen. And yeah, so I had my colleagues come over. They're extremely supportive and a really fun and talented gang who loves singing. So yeah, they came in for the day together with my Amalie Holtkleive and Gabriela Garubu, which are which used to be my singers in the band at the time. And it was just like a nice day in the office, just singing with your friends, trying to like of showcasing some of the music that's coming out. That was really fun. And the song Ever Working Tide is also about being touched by someone or being guided by someone and carrying it and being shaped by them through your life. And this sort of promise to keep influencing each other or stay in each other's lives. So having close friends coming in to sing on that song was really, yeah, was quite powerful to me. And I really wanted to, why it's on the end of the album, I thought it was a risk, and I like taking risks. You're sort of ending on this very repetitive, slow burner of a song, and it's quite theatrical. It's a bit strange. It doesn't have like a very clear shape in a way, but I think, again, with the elements of nature, those symbolic images, and it's a little love letter for the patient fans in a way.
Yeah.
I think it's a song and a melody that grows on you, and you couldn't put it anywhere else, I think. It's the longest song on the album as well, so if you put it in the middle, I'd have to sort of chop it up a bit. But I really wanted it to be a long sort of contemplative almost song that drifts away. And it's nice also to think that, to end with this image of an ever working tide like this, and having this repetitive theme in the cello again, Matthias Monson. Yeah, it sort of feels like the album can start over again after that last song. And I like that idea that this, hopefully the whole album as well as that song will sort of grow on people and try to make my listeners, attentive or force them to listen a bit harder, I guess. I'm not sure. I like to sort of expect a lot from my listeners instead of doing something, I guess, easy. I think it's a lot more fun.
The opening line, you obviously reference being stranded on an island of thoughts. Last question. If you were to be on an island and you could only have one album, this is just for now. You can change this answer in years to come if you don't, you know. But if you had one album on an island, what would that album be? That's a big question.
Oh, it's a difficult question because if you're lost on an island, wouldn't you want to feel uplifted in a way?
Yeah. That's true. Definitely.
And I have a lot of sad, I think, or...
Well, you can have a song or a song in particular. It doesn't have to be a whole album.
Yeah. No, I really love Grace, Jeff Buckley.
Jeff Buckley. Oh, wow.
Oh, wait. Yeah? Buckley. Yeah. Yeah. Grace by Jeff Buckley. I was given it by... my uncle, who was my first sort of inspiration into music, he gave me my first microphone, and he gave me the Grace vinyl. And so many of these songs have been very influential to me. The way he uses his range and the way he writes and his melodies are just out of this world, I think. But I also like Tapestry, Carole King is perhaps the song of the vinyl that I put on the most. No, that's a really difficult... Okay, actually, if I had to bring one album to a desert island, I think it would be Robin Body Talk.
Oh.
It's sad but uplifting.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of some of my happiest times being like, I don't know, 17, 18, 19. And it's perhaps the most influential thing for me. Yeah. Yeah, no, I think I'll go for that. It's a standard answer, I guess. But
no, that's great.
It's true, truthful. You've spoken and I'm nailed to the floor. I'm captured in the space you give my silence and noise. A chance to take part in the choice to open a door.
Thank you so much for talking through all 13 songs. You don't make it easy yourself putting 13 songs on an album as well. That is good going. And amazing as a listener. Two final games. This round is just a quick fire round. We've covered quite a lot. Quick fire questions. Which song came together the quickest and which took the longest?
Last Resort took the longest. And I think Wallace Road was the quickest.
Do you have a favourite song off the album or current favourite song?
I think it's going to be Look to Star.
Nice. Do you have a favourite lyric or song with favourite lyrics in it?
The intro. When life comes back to be lived, you'll even forget to forgive me. That's how small we are. I think that's very sad. But it's, even though I'm very much in love and I have this romantic image of love, it's like there's a part of me also like who has this, not, but nothing really matters, or like we're just ants roaming around. So yeah, for now I'll say that. Yeah.
And which do you most enjoy playing live?
Right now it's Heavier Than a Heart.
Ooh, nice. Yeah. Nice. Okay, final game is called What's the Occasion? And I give three different occasions, and if you could pick three different songs off the album, one for each occasion. So, and you've got the record right there, it's perfect. So we've got
just yeah, nice. Define myself, like,
I know.
What's Jeff Buckley's name? What are my songs?
Your brain's going to be frazzled after this chat. Yeah, literally going to be like,
look at my hair. It looks like I've been baked.
So you've got a wedding, a dinner party, and a car road trip. So wedding, dinner party, car road trip.
Ever Working Tide is definitely wedding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
I think... You said dinner party.
Yeah, so I would say record player on, you got your friends round.
Yeah. Well, maybe Delight.
Oh, yeah.
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 Some pizza and a good like orange wine.
Yeah. Yeah.
It has to be played quite low though, because it's quite busy, but it's got good energy.
Yeah, yeah, great. And car road trip, windows down.
Let's do Further Away.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. If it's a cabriolet and you're sad and it's quite grey, it's not like the good road trip.
Oh, you're going for a sad road trip.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I'm like, windows down, sun shining.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be, or actually Put It to Sleep could also be like a really good.
Oh,
like,
my God. I've had that in the car so loud.
Yeah. No, let's go for Put It to Sleep. I think that's better. Yeah.
Okay, but there are two different options for road trip. Nice.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. What have you got coming up in the future?
I'm going in the studio to finish two songs that will hopefully become singles quite quick. I'm really inspired right now, writing a lot of music. And then I'm coming to London and to Manchester on the 14th and 15th of May. And I'm extremely excited, and we're selling really good, and I think it's going to be like a really, really cool thing. So
amazing about that. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. I'm very, very excited for everything else you've got coming up. It's such a wonderful album, and real pleasure having you on talking about it.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it, and I apologize for saying sort of all the time. I just just noticed.
No, I really appreciate it. I mean, it must, yeah, it's not, you know, I really appreciate it. It's a long interview, so thank you very much. That was really fascinating.
It was really fun. It was also almost like a closure, yeah, writing this album and then talking about it for so long. I haven't done that for a long time.
Oh, amazing. Well, it's been fascinating. Thank you very much. Lovely to meet you.
Lovely to meet you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of LP Uncovered. If you like this one, you can go back and listen to all my previous episodes featuring lots of wonderful musicians. Just head along to wherever you listen to your favourite podcasts and subscribe away. Likewise, you can follow LP Uncovered on Instagram to keep up to date with upcoming episodes.